My name is Maceo.
My name is Puno.
And this is our podcast.
It's fun! With Puno.
And Maceo. Maceo and Puno.
It's Puno and Maceo.
Whatever. We're pleased to have our amazing guest here. Drum roll.
Boots and Cats.
I have a good vibe. I can't really say dear friend, but I have good vibes. With Bobby
Great
Hundreds.
Acquaintance.
Great acquaintance of mine. Bobby Hundreds, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
And so we met in at a talk like last year. And then, you know, you follow somebody on social media and like kind of see what they talk about. And I was always like, oh, this is, there's a diverse offering here. You know, it seems like you're riding the line between the conventional use of social media as like a platform for marketing, sharing, and then also kind of, you know, giving people a chance to maybe look at things a little differently sometimes. I guess maybe that's a good place to start. How do you think of your sort of place in the world? Maybe not your...
What are you about?
What am I about?
That was we wanted to talk about it. Not like, what do you do, but what are you about?
What are you about? I like bringing people together for whatever reason that is. I like connecting people. I like telling stories. That's very cliche now, but I really do. I really appreciate and enjoy telling stories. And I think throughout my life, I've been an artist and a designer, and I make clothes. I have a clothing company, and you know, I like putting videos together and movies and stuff like that. And at the baseline of it all, I love having an audience. I love telling stories. I love telling other people's stories. And so I think it's pretty simple. You know, I like people. I like being around people. I also hate people.
Oh, right? Man, me too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
like,
them.
I'm a misanthropic, you know, but social butterfly person at the same time. And I'm ambiverted in that way. I would prefer to be by myself. I just went to Miami last week for part of my book tour. And for 3 days, I was just by myself. I barely talked to anyone outside of the actual speaking engagement. And I love that. And then I also love going to the speaking engagement and hundreds of people and just diving into them. So people and stories and all that stuff.
Yeah. And like how long have you been building your audience?
My audience, well...
How long you been in the game?
Yeah.
I've been in if we're specifically the hundreds, I've been doing it for 16 years.
Yeah.
16 and a half years at this point, which is crazy to me because it feels like I just started still.
Really?
I still feel like we started this brand when I was 23. Mm-hmm. My partner Ben was 23, and I still feel like I'm 23 or 25 years old, and I'm not. I'm almost 40. And so it's bizarre to me to think about the fact that I sell to kids now who weren't born when we started the company, right? Whoa. So a lot of my demographic has never known a world where the brand has not existed. It's almost like when you were growing up and someone said Coca-Cola or Nike and you're like, those brands were just always in existence. A lot of the teenagers now, teenagers today would say the same. They'd be like, the hundreds has just always been there.
Even if you're 25, you don't remember
16 years ago when you were nine or something before that. I did other stuff. On Blogspot. So I had a blog that was running from 1999 to 2000 that was under just my portfolio name, which was just bobbykim.com. And I don't know how big the audience was then. No one really knew. There were no analytics. And then I was also a photographer, skate photographer, live band photographer. And I worked for, and I also freelance and wrote and designed for trans world magazines like Skateboarding and Stance and different cultural magazines like Complex, like Giant Robot.
The most impressive thing about that is that you were able to get bobbykim.com. Not Bobby.Kim.
No.
Bobbykim.com.
No.
Isn't it bizarre even just getting thehundreds.com?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But this was 2003, and you could kind of do that.
Yeah. Where do you buy domains in 2003?
There was not, I don't think GoDaddy was up yet, but there was literally register.com.
Yeah.
Register.com
and had like a red, white, and blue interface and
sketchy AF.
You could just type in, and we came up with a bunch of names and we edited it, you know, we whittled it down to the hundreds because the 100 stands for community, stands for people. And I did like a the-hundreds.com first, and it was open, and I was just like, oh, that's open. I'm like, is the hundreds? And it was. It was like $25.
And that's,
isn't that bizarre?
Isn't that enough to validate the thing?
You yeah. Like, but easy. again, back then,
yeah,
it really wasn't that uncommon.
But it's still unbelievable, though.
Yeah, it is.
But
it
even
is
when you go, if you were to go now and try to find... You kind of know you're trying to like string together something
mm-hmm.
yeah.
that isn't that no one would ever well, say
right
in order to get your domain
yeah
you know
yeah.
or it's like super long
yeah
or dot ninja or whatever
you spell right. it wrong with like a Z
yeah
instead
or
of
yeah
a
you get it in
S
like you get the domain from Turks and Caicos or something like yeah. that.
It's hard.
Well, now it's more about handles, right? And
handles.
Those you can dig yeah. up on the black web. You just go deep mm-hmm. in the dark web and you. Yeah. Pull some handles out.
Dang.
Yeah.
yeah. Mine.
Fair share.
Bitcoin. Bitcoin out some
oh,
of those.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Mine was Mace of Hearts on AIM.
Oh.
Oh.
You little lover boy.
Maceofhearts.com?
No. On AOL.
Oh. To get your instant messaging.
Yeah.
Handle.
My first screen name. Wow. What was your first screen name?
First
back in
screen
the day?
Name was.
Bobby Kim?
No, it was either Soda Pop. It was probably Soda Pop. Soda Deep. Pop or, yeah, that was the main one. So I had graffiti
yours?
Names. But
Puno
yeah.
Girl, G-U-R-L.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, because you've been riding this Puno thing for a while.
Ever since I was in fourth grade.
Whoa. Maceo, I need to pause real quick because we actually have a sponsor for this episode.
Oh, what is it?
It's ilovecreatives.com.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I'm the founder of I Love Creatives. And we're sponsoring our own show. Woo.
Full transparency. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. It's all about bootstrapping yourself. So there's a lot of fun things on there. We have a Squarespace design course that will teach you everything about Squarespace, but more so about designing websites. And it's super fun, gamified, and there's a community of over 800 students currently. So wow. Hop on, just go to ilovecreatives.com, and we'll be there with open arms. We're a very positive community.
Awesome. Now back to it.
Cool.
Is Puno not your real name?
It is now, legally. But when I was born, my parents named me Jennifer Lauren Puno. And then...
Is your last name Puno?
Well,
yes.
Now her whole name
but
is Puno.
But now my first name and last name are Puno.
You just have one name?
No, it's Puno.
No way.
Because, like, you have to have a first and last name. Because
so many people called you Puno instead of Jennifer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 1984, Jennifers everywhere.
Yeah.
And so our teachers would call us by our last name.
I don't have it anymore, but for the last several years, we had a women's brand called Jennifer.
Get out.
And it was Jennifer 1984 because
of that fact.
It was the number one name for 14 years, and it ended in 1984. For whatever reason, that was the year it turned. But for 14 years, it was the number one women's name in America. So I grew up with a generation of Jennifers. I had a cousin named Jennifer. Every girl I've ever loved was named Jennifer. Every girl in the movies was Jennifer. Jennifer Beals, Jennifer
okay,
Lopez,
so
Jennifer.
You had the brand.
Yeah.
Don't have it anymore.
That brand we stopped doing.
Tell us
when
like,
did you
about
you?
I hate to push
no,
on this.
No.
Like,
no.
You know, what happened?
Like you were saying, I don't even know if we were recording at that point, but you were saying that photographers don't realize that, you know, your batting average is like 0.01% in terms
yeah.
of the photos that you go through with and the photos that you choose not to use.
Yeah, you take, the point is basically every photo that you take that you don't use could be viewed as a failure.
Yeah, right. Thank you. That's so cool. I've never thought about it that way. And anyone who's ever shot a selfie knows this because you have the one
mm-hmm.
selfie and there's like grids of the same thing, but just like, your face just slowly
yeah.
moving around,
yeah.
the light kind of moving around. Like, those are all technically failures as well.
Yeah. Don't even count the live ones.
No. That's why they do it. They're like, you know what? We're just going to give you a bunch of frames to pick from.
Yeah.
Because we'll let you figure it out.
That's it.
Yeah.
So the same in business. And I say this a lot in my talks when kids come out to listen to me. And I'm like, they think that everything worked out. You know, that, oh, the hundreds. And I'm like, do you know all these other projects that never worked? Or even projects within the hundreds, but other brands as well. So Jennifer was one of those, and Jennifer was a women's brand that I started maybe three and a half years ago now, perhaps. Actually, I think we launched it. Yes, we launched it the week of Trump's election. Okay, and I was just banking that Hillary was going to win, and I was like, "We're going to have a woman president, so this is the time to release this project." And the philosophy behind the brand was at that time, and it's still going on now. Women were gravitating towards wearing men's clothing, oversized men's streetwear, you know, like Supreme hoodies. And they were buying a lot of like ours, right? Like athleisure type, like sportswear, like
mm-hmm. baggy. I'm like pointing at myself because I'm wearing like sweats right now.
Baggy sweats.
Yeah.
And I just thought there was a little bit of a disconnect because the women were going and buying these clothes from men's brands. Whereas these men's brands, and including mine historically, haven't always been the most friendly or positive towards women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so why should a woman support these men's brands that really aren't meant for women at all and actually don't want women in the space? Can there be a women's brand that women want that is for women, designed by women for women, but also that men would covet? So kind of like how girls covet like their boyfriend's hoodies or whatever, can we flip it so now it's the girlfriend's hoodie and the guy is just like, yo, can I wear that? So that started happening. We created this women's brand where it was just all oversized and drapey hoodies and sweats and stuff. And the guys wanted it, but I was just like, yeah, for sure you can wear it, but it says Jennifer huge on it. So I want people to see like a man is wearing sure a woman.
Where is this not working? Like
Trump was
very distracting. I get like
Trump was distracting. I was distracted, but
should have called it
a bunch of different
Hillary.
Reasons. No. Yeah, maybe a bunch of different reasons why it didn't. People didn't see how long it took me to explain that. So there was a lot of confusion. You know, a lot of guys going like, "Wait, is this? How do I size this?" Because I didn't size it guys' sizes. I sized it according to women's. It was like a 1, 2, 3 or something like that. And men were like, "Ah," and I'm like, "It's not for you. It's not for you." And they're like, "But we want it."
And that's exactly what you were doing.
Yes, and I didn't. Yes, exactly. And so there was too much. There's too much. It was too cerebral.
It was too cerebral. Sometimes our ideas are too cerebral.
Too cerebral. Like people just want clothes. You know?
They do just want clothes. But yeah. Why didn't you just make more sizes?
I did. But in the long run, basically, the hundreds took up a lot of my energy and continues to do so. And so I'm starting up another brand. I'm doing press for this brand, and now I'm doing press for, I'm doing like two different interviews. Like I would come on this podcast, talk about what we're working on for the hundreds, and go to another podcast, talk about, you know, and I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah. Like when you were saying what you're about, we talked about this in one of the episodes about being a slashy.
Slash this. A multi-hyphenate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And but we were also talking about how we are like that, but mm-hmm. now for us it's better to build an ecosystem where that all works for itself versus being too disparate.
Yeah.
And it's hard because sometimes you don't know if it is disparate, like until you build it and you're like, well, I actually have to split my time and none of it is helping each other.
Mm-hmm.
So Jennifer 1984 didn't really work out the way you thought.
Yeah, it did not.
But mostly because of time.
Mostly because of time and money. It started getting more expensive. We were doing all local production, different reasons. And my team is, when I hired people who work for me, they come to work on the hundreds, not on Bobby's weird pet project over here.
Ooh.
Where I'm like proving a point. You know, this is like, and it's all editorial. It's not necessarily making a bunch of sales. It was just making a lot of noise on the internet. But they were like, hey, I come to work every day to work on the hundreds, you know.
That's fine.
Oh, okay.
We're in downtown. That's just like what happens.
Absolutely.
So people even internally were like, yeah, dude.
Almost all everyone was like, hey, I'm maxed out working on stuff that you asked me to do for the Hundreds, which I get paid for, which I enjoy, right? Oh. Like, this is my identity. I work for the Hundreds. And I'm like, can you do this thing for Jennifer? They're like, yeah, okay.
But they're not fired up for it.
Not the way that I am. Some of the girls were, right? We had girls on the team that were really about it, and they're like, this is more me, and they really took it to heart. And I had one girl who worked on it full time. It was her job to, and she became the point person for everything, this girl Katie, who was amazing. And yeah, so she understood. But
I actually want to talk about this a little bit, because we haven't talked about managing a team at all.
Hmm.
Well, and I think that goes into our big question was, you've had the Hundreds for 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
How do you maintain fun? And I feel like team and building a team who's down for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere fits in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you fit that in there?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Answer this question with a little bit of this leading answer that we're making you say. Okay, go.
You stitch it all together. I'm like, well, a team is a... It's like pulled from... There's like a car honking in one part of the answer, and then the cat's like meowing.
It sounds great.
You're like, oh, thank you, Bobby. That's exactly what we were hoping you were going to say.
Amazing.
Good for you. Good news is that... they really do go hand in hand for me in terms of the enjoyment and the fulfillment of my job and the team I surround myself with. And, you know, when people look at everything that I'm doing the brand and I'm, you know, have a restaurant and I have this book, and they're like, how do you do everything? And I'm like, the only reason why I can do anything is because I've surrounded myself with the best, most supportive, loving, understanding, empathetic, and compassionate people at home, in the workplace, in my social life. It is so important. In fact, I think it's actually the most important in terms of happiness, in terms of who you surround yourselves with and partner with and pair yourself with. Because we know too many people who have everything in the world. They have all the money and all the power, especially here in Los Angeles, but they are in bad partnerships, they are in bad relationships, and they're miserable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Like the people that you would think the world gives them everything. And all we talk about in this life and in the education system is how to equip yourself to make money and to progress in your career and to grow financially. And these are measures of success and happiness and joy. And we do so very little with teaching young people how to be good to have good partnerships, which to me means really you being a good partner.
And,
right.
And that's, I mean, obviously I've only met you just for like, what, 30 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
But I already get this vibe from you that you're a very generous person and you're very empathetic and you're like careful mm-hmm. about other people's like wants and needs.
Yeah.
So like, did you know that before you started this, or did you have to create those skills?
No, I've definitely had to create those skills. I mean, you saying that I'm generous and empathetic, that's maybe the first time in my life I've ever heard those words.
Okay,
that's
well, that was 30
so
minutes
nice.
Of like...
Yeah, like, let's get it after the next 30 minutes. You can like, we may need to edit that part out.
The first impression is great.
Yes.
Well, I think because he was talking about Jen and how much he likes her. So why are you not... Why do you not agree with my...
Oh, no.
30-minute
well,
assessment.
Well, I'm by default an incredibly selfish person.
Okay.
I'm very, very aware of that. And I'm not a giving person. I'm very selfish. I'm very egocentric. And I think that's why many of us, not all of us, do start brands, because we want to create a universe where we're God.
Oh.
Which is what I've been able to do, right?
Yeah.
I built a community where it's everything goes my way, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to work well with others. So I had to work for myself and teach people how to do it my way. And if it doesn't go that way, I get frustrated.
But like... I mean, I'm not going to, there's people who make those own, their own platforms, but they're also very generous too.
Sure. I think I've had to learn how to be generous and how to be just a better person, because I know that on the other side of that, life just happens to be better for me. And it might not be that way for everybody, but it appears to me that the more connected I am with people and the more I listen to them and the more I learn, that I seem to do better in life. the more, right? It's the core tenet of every religion, selflessness. Mm-hmm. The more we focus on other people.
Yeah, I think of it as if I spend all my time talking about myself and what I want, I don't leave any room for people to talk about me to others or to open doors for me if I'm always trying to charge through them myself. So I try to spend at least a portion of my time talking about other people, what they're doing, what makes them awesome. And then I let just trust, and it has been a huge part of why I've been able to survive, is people talking about me in positive ways the same way. I don't even know that it can be boiled down to karma exactly, but I do. I think part of it is that people notice it.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you're fun, and it's like, and you're consistently that way. So people, whenever someone says, "Oh, you know Maceo," it's like as they know that if they happen to meet Maceo, like consistently, you're going to bring the fun.
I think so. I mean, I think also it is something about comfortability. When Bobby walked in, he was like saying how cozy it was.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think giving the fun might just be a way for people to disarm.
Mm.
If someone can feel comfortable with you without fear of judgment or what have you, then they're like, okay, I like this person because I can take off my mask or whatever.
So when you were hiring people,
mm-hmm.
did you hire a certain type of person?
Oh, okay. So yeah, in terms of being a manager, this is one thing that they don't teach you about when you're an artist and you're an entrepreneur, a founder, and you're going out there to create your vision, your dream, is that at some point, if it works out, you are going to end up being a manager. You're going to be a boss. And that's not necessarily a role that most of us want. And I've never wanted that. And I'm really not a good boss. And I should probably stop saying that because I say it in almost every interview and my staff listens to it. But I'm just not great at being it. So I have to try really hard.
What are the top three things you're not good at
as a boss? I think I'm incredibly impatient. Right. It's probably my biggest weakness is that I can't be patient with people. And being a boss, you should be patient. You should be and know how to delegate properly. I can't delegate. I want to do everything myself. It has to be my way. Or it's perfect. It has to be that way. And if they do it and it's slightly wrong, it like, and I'll be up all night. Like, I'll just do it. Let me take it over. And that's not delegating properly. And just be willing to sit down and teach. I would want to do that. I just don't seem to have the time, or maybe I'm not making the time. But it takes a lot of time to be a good boss. You really have to be instructive and be a leader and spend time with people and
be willing to say things more than once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're all so busy, and mm-hmm. so I don't find enough time in my day to sit down and spend and give that to people. And so I wish I could be a better boss, but also at the same time, I don't really think I'm meant to be a boss. I think my time and services are better used elsewhere in doing things like this, for example, to be honest. Yeah.
So when did you find that out in the 16 years?
Every single day from the moment we hired the first people. I was just like, God, I am not good at this and I'm going to be a terrible dad. And I think I'm a pretty good dad, but I can also be a much better dad as well.
Being a good boss is kind of like knowing how to operate electronics in the sense that if you are making a mistake on the computer and you blame the computer, you're a bad boss. If you make a mistake on the computer and you realize that it's because of you that the computer is not doing what you want it to, then you can take a break, reflect, change the way you're interacting with it. With the computer, and then things will work out.
Yeah, it's like it's what they teach people in Apple, like Apple Genius Bar. They teach every single employee empathy because, like, when people come there, they already feel stupid. They had to drive all the way to the Apple Genius Bar because they couldn't figure out how to whatever with their phone. So it's like the first thing you
get
the
font small again.
Yeah. No, bigger.
Yeah,
bigger.
That I didn't want to do that.
That was a little ageist.
We do know that it is.
Yeah.
Kuno, one sec. I have to pause. The conversation is going really well because I neglected to tell you that, of course, I'm the founder and editor of citizensofculture.com. We're hosting this cool workshop called Soft Skills, which in relation to what we're talking about is really pertinent because it helps you with time management, prioritizing your day, and your collaborative practice. So if you're interested in that, go to citizensofculture.com and check out the Soft Skills workshop. You're going to love it.
You are going to love it. It's so soft. It's like the softest skills.
Oh, yeah. Like a baby's butt. Sorry. Back to what we were talking about.
All right. Let's get back to
it. All right. Yeah.
What do you think your employees would say about you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've had so many over the years, and I'm sure each would have their own opinion. Some people downright hate me.
Oh.
And, you know, if we had to let them go for whatever reason, you get some disgruntled former employees. That's a part of the business. Mm. I don't know.
Should we ask them later?
No, I have a caller right now.
Oh my God. Let's bring in the guy you fired last week. What is this?
Okay, so that is a really interesting part, right? This people skills thing that you're, you talked about this misanthropic, not liking people, but loving people thing. Mm-hmm. And you also talked about having a great team, but then you also talked about like wanting like full transparency about wanting to sort of create your own universe. So swirling and all of this stuff for me,
you love a swirl.
I love a swirl. It I up. Like, oh I like to, mm-hmm. I like to, you know, throw smoke on the tea and, you know, let the stuff come up. So what I'm reading right now is kind of, This part that I want to get to around what makes community so important to you.
Yeah.
If you have this sort of love-hate relationship with people in general.
Right. That sounds so bad that I say that I hate people. I mean, sometimes I really do.
And I get it. You mean people.
You can't even stop yourself.
No.
No, like people, right? Yeah. Not persons necessarily.
No, exactly.
Yeah, like I
maybe
totally,
the wrong people, the bad people. Yeah. No one likes the bad people.
Yeah.
I wrote a book, it's a memoir. And what I realized in the course of writing it was I never really felt like I belonged anywhere. Many of us. This is not a special story to me, but yeah, this is part of my story, which is growing up feeling that way, but also the cultures I was attracted to. I grew up being a skateboarder when skateboarding was not popular. I grew up being in the punk scene when punk was not cool at all. And the way that I dressed and everything that I was interested in, it didn't fit into a box. And so as I'm writing about this in the book, I realized what I was doing was I was trying to find a place and I couldn't find a place. And so I built my brand as that community for myself, but also for anyone else who felt kind of the same way that I did. If you didn't belong anywhere else, you felt like you weren't being included, we will include you in this community. And it's inviting. It's whereas streetwear up until that point was largely exclusive and it was very much a cool guy club, we kind of broke that wall down and said, okay, we'll be the brand that will invite you in. If that store is going to mistreat you and make you feel like an idiot and not sell to you, come into our store. And we literally built the stores to reflect that, whereas the streetwear stores of the early 2000s were modeled after a lot of Japanese architecture, and they were cold, gray cement, glass, like an Apple store. And I was like, our stores need to be made of wood, like custom wood cabinetry, warm lights, you know, and
that's
the people that we
hire.
That's
why you care so much about the space, because everything.
Yeah.
Is
well,
like
there's intent, right? Mm. Yeah. And our design is everything begins with an opinion and has intent and a story and a purpose, and even down to the fixtures in the stores, the way that the clothes hang, they face out for a reason. I want them to face. So it was very specific. Proclivity is to hate people and to, you know, I'm a very selfish person, so I want to exist in this space where it's everything just me and myself. But the more I do that in life, it works for a certain window of time. Mm-hmm. But the more I sit there, the less content I am.
But also, this is the brilliance of the dynamic, is that because of the nature of the work you do, you're like forced.
I'm forced into it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm forced to go into the office, and then I'm forced to go out and meet people. And when I do, I'm like, this is amazing.
Oh, yeah. This isn't that bad.
Like, this is not only not that bad, this is what I need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've now reached a point in my life where the last 5 years, I'm like, anytime I've had struggle or some kind of crisis or something's not working out, I can actually turn to my community and ask for help, and they come through. Mm. And they are tripping over themselves to help me, and they're tripping over themselves to help each other. And everything seems to work out when I invite my community to help me. And so it's really just over the last 5 to 10 years that I've been realizing this, and now I wrote a book about it. I'm like, this was all about community. This, even though entrepreneurialism and branding is today so self-centered and about creating your own universe and being the king of your world, I am now in this second valley or this second hill, this journey where I'm like, oh, actually, this had nothing to do with me. It had all to do with bringing people together, and that's where I really found true happiness.
But I also think it's like a, not to use too many animal analogies, but I'm about to go there. It's kind of a chicken and the egg thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you didn't have a community and you had to be a lone wolf for so long mm-hmm. in order to like grow that community.
Right.
To then appreciate the community that yeah. found what you were trying yeah. to build.
If I had been sufficiently loved and taken care of, I think growing up, you know, because I had a really tortured relationship with my dad and my family as well. So even within the home. And so maybe, yeah, if I was like my kids, like I hug and kiss them like 400 times a day, they feel very much like they belong, and they are growing up in a community that's diverse, and I think they feel like they fit at this point in their lives. But maybe if I had grown up like that, I wouldn't have desired it so much and craved so much of that community the way that I do now, where I'm like constantly searching for a home, you know?
And so now that you've found this part of it, I kind of want to get back to the growing the hundreds for 16 years
mm-hmm.
and maintaining the fun.
Yeah.
Even through like, through building a team, through having to make money from your product, like having to actually sell merchandise
mm-hmm.
to having to iterate on it and make it work for you because you've got a family.
Yeah.
Like, how did you, what was the driving force behind that? Was it always, I just want to build this community, but you didn't know it at the time? Or was it, I want to build this world? Or
it was,
I just need money.
It was never really money driven, and money has never been a motivator for me. It's a motivator for my business partner, and thank God I have him. Otherwise, we really wouldn't be making money. I just wanted to make stuff. I love making things, and I enjoy that. I don't like the finished. I don't care about the finished product. I care about the process and this building the story and working on it and the flow of like actually designing, writing. I love that the momentum.
Have you right? always loved the process?
I have. I really. Anytime I find myself feeling depressed or unsatisfied in life, there's no momentum. I'm not working towards anything. There's nothing actually that I'm striving for. Like my life doesn't feel like there's inertia. And so when I'm designing or writing or making art or anything creative, I feel like I'm getting to a destination. And I love that. Getting to the destination is incredibly disheartening for me.
I have one question that we're going to open up to close things.
Yep.
Because we're getting to a destination.
Yes.
You just put out this book.
Mm-hmm.
The book is now out. You've written it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a memoir.
It's a memoir. And alongside that parallel, you have The Hundreds, which is an unfinished book. That
yep.
story is still being written.
Mm-hmm.
Not to put you on the spot, which means I'm going to put it on. How are you feeling about the book now that it's out and it's you've done, I guess, most of the touring?
Mm-hmm.
And given everything you just said.
Given what I just said, I'm exactly there with that. with a book where I'm starting to lose a sense of connection and, yeah, like I'm untethered. I'm starting to become like unmoored from
it's
that
like
book.
Something that happened.
It happened and I did it and it's done. But what's next? Mm-hmm. Right?
Is that your impatience?
It's probably my impatience. It's probably that I am never appreciating things around me. I'm taking things for granted and I always want what's next, which is many of us creators, we're all built like this, where we're never happy with that. We're like, okay, it's done. What's going on next? And so I'm working on my next book. I'm working on adapting this book to a TV show. So there's the book is continuing on, but the actual book itself, it's done. And I did 15 stops on my book tour so far this year, and I'm done touring for this month. But the last three or four stops were a little rough.
Yeah. Oh.
You know, like answering the same questions. The audience, I think, enjoyed it just the same. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the people, meeting the people, but actually sitting up there and answering the same questions again I started getting a little delirious. And actually on my last stop in Miami, I was like halfway through maybe a third or fourth question. And I just stopped and I looked at the audience and I said, I'm sorry. I'm completely incoherent and distracted and my brain is mush. I've answered these questions so many times. And just to be honest, you know, like the enthusiasm of answering these questions isn't the same as as impassioned as it was on day one of the tour. You know, when I came on LA and I was like, everything was new and festive and exciting. But now I have to find that excitement and momentum in other places. And so it is in the adaptation. And so there's always something in the works. But yes, as far as the momentum around that book and writing that book, it's done. And that's not a place that I love to be.
That's how I feel, though, about everything. Like, I will do something a couple of times, and if I don't change it up a little bit, I'm just like, this is so boring to me.
Yeah.
And for me, if my, like, goal in life is to always have fun, like, I can't.
Right.
Like, when I would teach... And I would teach it in person. Oh my God, that was the feeling I would get.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I know, poor you. Like, you have this question, and I don't want to, you don't know about all the stuff that I've, but I really don't want to answer this question again. Like, But then it's always about, I think that's the weird thing about humans is that we always find discontent because that's how we evolve. Yeah. And like, it's so important for us to feel discontent in order for us to have enough motivation to change.
Yeah.
So I started to appreciate that boredom that I get and being like, oh, okay, well, Puno, now how can we change it up a little bit so I can like it again? Mm-hmm. I totally feel you on that part, like that switch from the boredom / over it to right when I'm like, oh, I can do something about it. Like that is like my favorite part.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I feel this way, I do two things. I move all the furniture in my house.
You take all your clothes off. I take a selfie.
I take a naked selfie. I move all the furniture in my house around. You know? Like, even if I move it back, I just try it. I just like, what if I put it vertical?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what if I put the table long ways instead of parallel with the wall? Right, just to see. And then I'll walk around like that for a couple days because it will force me, my muscle memory, from engaging with my lived environment the exact same way. It's like a little brain hack. Yeah. And then I, the other thing that I do is I eat a bunch of
mushrooms?
Basically, no, not mushrooms. Junk food from when I was a kid. Like the specific kinds of junk food that I, like hot Cheetos, Fruity Pebbles, you know.
To put you back in the brain
state. To put me back in like this nostalgic state of youth and cavalierness. So between the two things, a new environment and then like reconnecting with my childhood, I have like an emergence of creative energy. And this is like if it's drastic. Yeah.
Can you record yourself when you do this next?
Yeah, I'll do it. I'll just talk to myself.
Also, can your body physically, like physiologically handle that amount of junk food the same way, because thinking of doing that and I'm like, and I would be going diarrhea.
You don't have to eat.
You
don't have to eat all of it.
Just mush it around in your mouth and spit it out.
Yeah, like if you're going to have a really greasy quesadilla, then maybe don't eat the whole thing, you know, right? Just have a slice and then give the rest to your kids and be like, this is what I used to eat or whatever.
The furniture thing is really cool because that's what we're doing when we travel, right? Because you're putting yourself, you're changing the world around you, forcing yourself to look at problems a little bit differently. When you go to this country, the driver sits on this side now. And, what does it look like from that angle? And the doors are like here, and you don't use your fork in that way here. And
The simple one is a regular practice, actually, is I write with my left and right hand.
Dang.
So whenever the book is easier to write with my right side, I'll write with my right hand. And then if I'm like somebody's on my right side, then I'll just use my left hand.
Oh, you can do that?
Yeah.
Wow. Ambidextrous?
Well, I've been practicing it for years.
Wow.
So just start. And you'll the amount to which you suck writing with your non-dominant hand, you'll come to see it as like really just frankly a clear indicator of your bias.
Right.
Because like clearly you're capable of writing beautifully, and also clearly other people are capable of writing beautifully with that hand.
Yeah.
The fact that you have a good hand and a bad hand is purely a product.
It seems to be fine when we're typing.
Yeah.
The left hand seems to type just as well.
It's true.
Well.
He's always coming off the bench.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's
because I've never thought about that.
Just practice typing with your right hand.
Yeah.
Actually, if I look at my keyboard, it's more worn down on the left.
Probably.
One more question. Bonus. You are a slashy, so you probably, like us, have a ton of ideas. And probably in the past 16 years, had so many fun ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you try to prioritize the funnest or the idea to pursue?
Oh, well, at this point in my life, there really does need to be some type of profitable return on it, just because I know I can't single-handedly do it myself. Outside of writing, that's 100% me, and I don't pay anyone to do that. But if I have a greater endeavor like the Jennifer brand, I know I'm going to have to staff it up. And so those people need to be paid well to live. And so there needs to be money coming in. So I got to figure out a way for it to actually make business sense first. Otherwise, it's just a pipe dream. It's just a cool passion project I can do in my garage. And that's like a very selfish, that's like a vanity thing for me. But if it's something that I can actually see like, oh, actually there's a way to make money, then we can go full force with it. So is that a boring answer?
No. So like if you have all of your ideas, even if they're all products for the hundreds, like you're just, you're just like, that one will make more money.
Yeah. So we do a lot of collaborations, right? So about once a week, almost once every 2 weeks, at least we put out a different collaboration with brands, artists, musicians, restaurants. And those collabs for the most part are, we know how they're going to make money, but there is maybe a third of them where we're like, we're going to lose money. And some of them are completely charity based. We just did a project with Homeboy Industries. We gave all the money to Homeboy. We did a Indigenous People's Day project. We gave all the money back to the Indigenous community, Indigenous activists from around North America. And so those are the most meaningful in terms of my soul and us taking pride in what we do with the hundreds. And that's why I love the brand so much now, is because we get to do a lot of that stuff, because we're making enough money over here doing a project we're doing a project with WWE. Of course, that's going to sell a lot. You know, they have a really rabid, diehard fan base, and we made some really cool looking t-shirts and hoodies and stuff like that.
My blood pressure just went up hearing about it, thinking about the two communities of ridiculous, like, they love merch.
Mm-hmm.
WWE is almost as much about merch as the actual sport, you know?
Oh, yeah. So that's just going to do gangbusters. That's coming out in like 2 weeks, but that makes us enough money to where then I can go over here and meet someone who's on the ground, frontline activist somewhere, or supporting a cause that we believe in. And I'm like, let's do something together. I'm just going to give you all the money and you can do whatever you need to do with it. So that's how, there's not an exact science. We're not great business people. We don't sit down and there's no algorithms and we don't have a strategist or anything, but we do what kind of feels right, you know?
Yeah.
We've just made the same amount of money since we started. You know, there's not a ton of money in what we do. You know, I have a house and a couple cars, and that's enough for me. Like, I just don't need more than that. My kids go to public school. We're pretty simple. And I don't own a lot of stuff. Like, I don't need stuff. So I just need to make enough to be able to make as much as I can, and whatever I dream up, I can make it happen. Take care of the people who are working with me, and then on the side, be able to give back, you know, to in causes and purposes that I believe in.
Generous.
Yeah. Well, now. Okay, hopefully and more so.
So there's this really deep quote that I learned from this guy named Bonaventure.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, the first love is love of self for the self.
Hmm.
The second love is love of others for the self, for what love of others for what they can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
The third love is love of others for others.
Oh, wow.
Right? Yeah. Working for others, being altruistic. The highest love is love of self for others.
Oh, wow.
Does that make sense?
Mm.
Yeah.
It's like finding your true purpose, what makes you happy, and then giving it to the world.
Yeah.
Not sacrificing who you are for the world.
Right.
But being who you are for the world.
Tao of Maceo.
Yeah.
I love that.
So thank you for coming, Bobby.
Thank you. I learned a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
This is good.
I never learn in podcast interviews. They're like, Bobby, talk. And I'm like,
give us. Okay, let's exit on seeing who can visualize the memory of the keyboard.
Oh, I can't.
In terms of letters?
Yeah.
Closing. Oh, no, I cannot.
I can't.
You're going to try.
I'm not even going to try.
Like,
I don't even. Wait. Oh, right. That's a better way to do it.
You're just type.
Hi. H-I. How are you?
QWERTY.
Yeah. So keep go to the top row. Q-W-E-R-T-Y.
No.
You? You? I?
You?
J-K? No.
Well, that was a fun episode.
They all are.
So if you felt that way too, we would love it if you could, Maceo, could you tell them what they should do?
If you could, just go ahead and drop us a million stars, or as many as you think are worthy, as a little review, and maybe tell us what you liked about it.
Yeah, and then our parents will be proud of us.
I can feel it already.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
It's fun with Puno.
And Maceo and Puno.
It's Puno and Maceo.
Whatever.